You know when you hear that music. Well, it's Busted Pencils, but more importantly, it is Jacob Producer's Choice Day. Oh my goodness, the fun will begin shortly. Johnny Lupinacci here. Me, Dr. Tim Slecker. That's Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. And chairman of the board, Jacob. There he is. Johnny's laughing.
Tim thought he was really funny on that one. He almost took himself out. Wow.
I saw Johnny laughing there, and he caught me, you know, like, that was a making fun of me laugh. I could tell.
Is this true, Johnny?
No. I don't think making fun at you, Tim. I just think the way that you say chairman of the board always brings me a smile.
Well, you know, I'm hoping it doesn't remind you of the Porky Pig episodes that we potentially grew up with. Those Looney Tunes. Speaking of which, no, not Looney Tunes on Jacob's Choice, but Jacob, we are excited to be guests on our own show. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to you, my friend.
Guys, I'm excited because
it's a Friday once again.
And a Friday means it's time for a special segment we do here every week with Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Dr. Tim Slecker, and me. You already said I'm the chairman. Anyway, let's just do the intro.
For Choo Choo Producer, Jacob's Choice, Chairman of the Board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the Board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, Chairman of the Board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
So guys, if you remember last week on the Producer's Choice show, by the way, Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, always happy to have you guests on your own show. You're very good at it. I have to say, nobody shows up to their own show to be asked questions like you guys do. And I'm proud to host you. So thank you for being here. Last week, if you recall, we went back in time through the mists of history to the 20th century to ask you about some of your foundational student moments that helped shape you into the teachers that you have become and continue to be. So today, we're going back in time again, but not as far. Because this week, guys, I'm going to ask you some of these foundational moments as teachers that have impacted what type of teachers you've ended up being. Tim, you went first last week, so Johnny, you can go first this week. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, tell me about a positive experience teaching that you have had and how that impacted the type of teacher you've continued to be.
Well, Jacob, I've had a lot of positive experiences teaching, which is probably why I stuck with it. And you had good positive behavior reinforcement on the career trajectory. But let's see if I think of one that first comes to mind. Let's see. I think it's my very, very first year teaching, you know, way back at the turn of the century. And, it was in a math classroom in Detroit. And, I had an honors geometry class. So I had a handful of sections of algebra, a section of pre-calculus, and a section of honors geometry. And the honors geometry class was pretty phenomenal. I won't get into the specifics and details of, you know, the unique, you know, roster in that class, but it was a pretty excellent group of students, untraditional students, a little bit older than traditionally students taking geometry. A lot of them were, you know, in an honors geometry class, as part of like finishing their degree a little later, just to kind of way that school was comprised of students. But they, you know, we always say we learn from our students, but that they knew I was a first year teacher, and that group sort of took me under their wing and gave me so much feedback, which I hadn't really gotten a lot of becoming a teacher. Sad to say enough, I was teaching in some high need areas and they said, hey, this is great. We got a math teacher and he's doing awesome. And I was like, you know, I feel like I'm not doing so great. But they said, no, you're doing awesome. Just keep up the good work. And they didn't give me a lot of constructive feedback in terms of different things to try. And, you know, and they were also old, quite older than I was at that time, being, you know, just in my early 20s. And then I had this group who was just vocal. I mean, they were amazing. They would say almost every day, real-time feedback, hey, today's lesson went great, but, you know, this, this, and this could be better. You know, maybe try this tomorrow. Do this with us. How are your other classes going? You know, as we sort of work on our math problems, and at that time, lots of proofs in geometry class. But they gave me so much feedback. And I will say, Jacob, nearly every time what they suggested was spot on, and it worked amazingly in my other classes. And I, for one, would not be the teacher I am even today without that, you know, full year of that honors geometry class with just a really, you know, a really unique group who taught me so much on how to teach. So you always hear we learn from our students, but in that context, you know, I was really, you know, graced with being able to learn a lot from and with my students as I was sort of cutting my teeth as a teacher, you know, and they, you know, it's like when you get a good coach, they really take you to the next level. That group of honors geometry students at Cooley High School in Detroit, Michigan, no longer open, wish it was still going, but, you know, Cooley High School, and pretty amazing experience for me, Jacob. I think about it still to this day all the time.
It's easy for teachers to fall into sort of a mindset of sort of a hierarchical mindset in the classroom, because inherently you're the teacher, you're at the top of the pyramid there, you're instructing the students. Do you feel that that situation you had, Johnny, did that help you develop a sort of different view of the relationship you can have with students?
Well, you know, Jacob, I went into teaching, knowing, I think we talked about this before on the show, a lot of bad experiences in education and some good ones. And I wanted to, you know, I think people ideally go in wanting to do good. I wanted to be those great teachers that I had. But there was so much I didn't know. But I think I already went in with a disposition of like, it's not us versus them. You know, I was taught, you know, don't smile until at least after Thanksgiving, those kinds of things, you know, go inside the classroom and kick the garbage can really hard, you know, like, you know, set precedents. And if you're too fun or you're too nice, the kids will take advantage of you. You know, the secret, I kind of already went into teaching knowing like the kids are in charge. You just have to kind of steer the flow. And you're responsible. And so that those two things can sometimes clash. And I'm like, go with the flow, not against it. But I also have a job to do. And so being, you know, firm and disciplinary, I think I've said this before, through engagement and not compliance. But that was something I believed in. But it was in fact, Jacob, that group that really helped me stick to it, because they were like, change this, but don't change about you that you're with us, you know? And I think a lot of teachers struggle with that. I think a lot of us have, you know, an internalized, maybe even overt ageism.
Yeah.
You know, like you're talking about, like, here's this like, well, I know best. Well, like, well, you're a lunatic if you're 20 years old and you think you know more than all, the, you know, all the kids combined. You might know more about math than them, but you don't know more about the culture they're in, their lives, their, you know, the nuances of what works and doesn't work in those groups. So that was, I kind of was lucky. I went in not wanting to control students. So that was something they were able to help give me good reinforcement. Like, don't change that about you, but you do got to be tougher on some of these other things. Like, don't let these kids. And to be fair, that unique group, Jacob, some of the students were quite older, in their almost in their 20s themselves and things. And so, you know, they were like, yeah, don't let these little ones run you over all day. And I'm like, don't worry, I won't. Like, but most of the time, I'll be honest, like my ninth grade algebra classes were, you know, running all over me. But they helped give me some tools, to, you know, to stay true to who I was. In kind of, you know, a teacher who is with students, not against them or there to control them, but helped give me some tips on how to like establish what I call my teacher voice, you know, which wasn't as a yeller. Like, I genuinely don't get mad at young people making mistakes, even behavioral ones. You know, it happened many times. Every teacher listening knows, you know, you get those students who verbally tell you where to go, and they don't tell you where to go, like turn the page to the next set of problems. You know, they have a bit of sometimes pretty tough to take words, but you know, you go and say that that's sort of what teenagers do.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be, you know, they're supposed to be insubordinate or whatnot, but you got to give them some guardrails and you got to have some boundaries. And there are ways to establish and enforce those without trying to like entrench in the battle of teacher versus student.
Well, that's exactly the thing, Johnny, because yeah. I think I had it backwards. You were talking about this situation. I think maybe what it was is actually the mindset you already had is what allowed you to learn from these students and be able to take that feedback positively. Tim, I want to ask you the same exact question. What was an early teaching experience that was positive, and how did that inform the type of teacher you continued to be?
Well, unlike Johnny, I got mad a lot. This will actually be a lead into an incredibly powerful experience that was a positive, was recognizing how much you don't know when you're in situations of dealing with 20 plus, you know, children. And so this is my second year teaching fifth grade. So that's 9 and 10 year olds. And, you know, you think about a 9 and a 10 year old and you're like, wow, they're actually quite mature. They're able to reason. They're able to have really great conversations. And they're not middle school kids yet, which is another beauty. They're kind of like, for me, they're that perfect sweet spot of curious, interesting, continue to talk, want to know more. And, but in my second year, you know, teaching, I taught a fifth grade, totally self-contained classroom, which meant the kids that came in at 7:30 in the morning were with me until 3:35 in the afternoon. I taught reading. I taught math. I taught social studies. I taught language arts, English. I taught, you name it, science. You know, that's what a self-contained fifth grade classroom looked like. And so I had the same 22 kids that year for the entire 36 weeks. So that means every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 7:30 in the morning, those kids that you had the night before are all coming back the next day. And within that group, there are ones that, you know, and I don't know if a lot of teachers will admit this, but there are some that you really, really like. And there are some that you are absolutely positive that they were put in front of you to push you to the limit of wherever it is you can break. And that actually happened to me. I had a student, David Bogus. David, if you're out there right now, you are, 43 years old. So, which is in itself all weird, but
I'll be reaching out.
Yeah, please reach out. But David was a rough kid. And daily, regularly throughout the same day, created lots of challenges. And I think one day putting that together, he took me to my limit, and my limit broke down into an anger, and I turned that into, David, just get the hell out of this room right now. And I don't know if there was something about the tone in my voice that he sensed that maybe he had crossed the line too, but he got up, started crying, walked out into the hallway. And, for a second I was like, okay. And then, you let him out there and I walked out and I was still just stewing. I was like, David, what are we going to do? What's the problem here? He's like, Mr. Slecker, you don't get it. I had to wake up at 5 a.m. to get my sister. My mom's at home drunk every night. I had to make dinner, and I'm just sick of being in school. And it was just like that moment was, oh. So you're not just being a little 9-year-old who thinks every day how they're going to wake up and terrorize teachers. Your real life is really challenging, and you need people to see that. And that was that moment where it was just like, you know, not saying that in the going on throughout there weren't days where you get challenged, but it always gave me that ability to really go back to the things I had been taught about being a teacher, which is you don't know what these kids are doing when they're living their lives outside of the classroom with you. And really, whenever you can, get to know who they are, get to know what's happening in their families, because it will give you a perspective that on those days you can go, oh, I get it. It doesn't allow you to potentially excuse it. Oh, that's just, you know, let them go crazy. But you get a sense of understanding. And then from that standpoint of saying my favorite teachers, it gave me an opening then to talk to David at that point from a position that I think really allowed me to take off the anger and the heat, and really show up in a way that was concerning. And he felt that, you know, and the story then goes, and guess what? He was a pain and tough all year. It didn't change, and magically he was an awesome student. But there was an understanding that there were times when I could be just give him the look and be like, look, man, if you need a break, step out, come back. Or, hey, during recess, come on in, let's talk about it. So it was that moment of seeing the fact that, you know, I'm not teaching a bunch of kids stuff for them to remember. I'm in a relationship with lots of individuals who've got all kinds of things going on in their lives. And for a moment, you know, maybe 6 hours a day, I get an opportunity to work with them in a way that hopefully creates a positive future for them. And you can only do that by acknowledging who they are for real and the things they bring. And so that to me just really gave me that sense of saying, you know, I knew it, I was taught about it, I understood it, but in the moment, you know, second year of teaching, totally forgot. And, you know, David, thank you for showing up that day, because that was an incredibly profound day for me.
Man, that was a great story, Tim.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling that one.
Totally true, though, too. I know. I think Johnny's actually heard me tell this story one other time, too. But, you know, though, I think it's those things that what is it about, you know, quote, experiences that can drive you to be better. It's also being open to realizing that there's a humbleness. I think Johnny has always been putting it. There's a humbleness that we need to approach when we're standing, you know, in front of a group of children who every one of them has had, you know, in the morning, the experience they went through in the morning before they got to your classroom could be everything from an awesome, great family breakfast to getting your sister up from school while your mother lays there hungover from the night before. So,
and there's a difference between, as you said, learning about it in the classroom setting yourself, you know, the troubles kids could have, these things, versus being there as a teacher and confronting it in your actual life as a teacher. It really brings it home, it would seem to me. Is there a lens through which you can see this and say, as a young teacher, you saw this as a problem that you have in your classroom, and you came to see it more as you and him are working together on this problem? I mean, he's not just happy being bad. He's got a problem, and you both are working on it.
Well, for me, it really pushed away this whole idea of some type of classroom management discipline system that I had to then continue to enforce even more rigidly to get him to comply and get in line. Mm. And it really pushed me in that direction of saying, like, look, okay, quote, some behavior plans you need, you know, what are the rules of the classroom? But the reality of when, you know, kids are acting out, and I think, you know, John, that's communication. They're speaking, they're just speaking a different language. And so our, you know, quote, discipline plans, rules, whatever. In this point, if you're not listening to what they're saying to you, it doesn't matter how tight you run your classroom and how tight of a ship and how many discipline plans you have. If you can't hear what they're saying, you will never get into a relationship with those students to be able to truly have a meaningful experience as a teacher.
Second question of the evening for you two fine folks. Tim, great answer, great story. I said a positive experience. You told a challenging one. I'm deducting points for that. You do not listen and you don't follow instructions. So I need you to just get out of here, go in the hall for a bit while Johnny and I try to continue this episode of the Producer's Choice Show.
But Jacob, I spend every day taking care of my mother-in-law.
Yeah, I've heard it 1,000 times, Tim. All right. Johnny, now, because you followed instructions, you're going to find this very easy to answer this question. What was a challenging experience you had as a teacher? And what did that teach you about becoming a better teacher? It could be something similar to what Tim already said on the wrong question. Johnny, the floor is yours.
Yeah, Jacob, I'll just kind of, you know, piggyback on the last story, a challenging experience that I had as a teacher, which came up quite a bit then in the years that followed those first few years of things was, you know, finding my balance between like really learning what my teacher voice was, really coming into it and having a good balance of what I call disciplinary, but not punishing. Right? Like striving for engagement and not compliance. But, you know, things started to get more distracting in the classroom and we entered the era of cell phones and all kinds of different, you know, school-wide policies that were very different than my traditional approach of like, hey, let's kind of go with the flow. And, you know, there are a lot of things that, you know, we can work together and maybe there's ways to include using our cell phones in classrooms or, you know, like following the rules, but, you know, getting some teacher autonomy. Well, I was in a school with a new principal and, you know, they're not wrong for this. They said, hey, we can't have a policy that's some way in one room and different than the other room. You know, this is starting to like create some misunderstandings from students. I would say more opportunity for them to sort of abuse situations. But I think a challenging situation for me, Jacob, was things were working great for me in my classroom. They weren't necessarily going so great for my peers at that time. And initially my first reaction, and like Tim brings up the importance of, you know, humility when facing our students, but also when working with our peers that are different than us. You know, I initially thought, yeah, you know, that's their problem. I mean, if they want to try and enforce every little rule in their classroom, they're going to get in these power struggles with students and students are going to dig in, you know, and it's going to be a nonstop, you know, battle in the classroom that quite frankly, how I frame my math classroom isn't, I don't have time for it. I don't have the energy. It's not what I signed up for. You know, I work with students, not against them. I'm, you know, a coach, not a cop. I had all these, you know, sayings already about how this was not my problem, but it was a good reminder that struggle was, but you're part of a team. And every veteran teacher out there knows this, like it's important that we have different styles of teaching that, you know, children have different kinds of teachers. But it's also important for us to kind of find a middle ground. And Jacob, that year, you know, I was like, okay, I've got to change some of what I do. Like I've got to teach with the team. I got to play, you know, the script that our coach or our principal, you know, is asking us to play, got to run the system. And so it was a different year. It was a challenging year for me because it was more more of a day-to-day challenge on, like, okay, I have to be more disciplinary even than I have found to be comfortable in terms of discipline versus punishment. And I have to have some pretty strict consequences around some things that aren't really a distraction to me. But I saw later in my years how cell phones did get to be quite distracting in classrooms. And so, you know, I had to start teaching differently in terms of spending a little bit more time enforcing policies, you know. And so that was an eye-awakening, difficult year because it was harder for me. I didn't enjoy the teaching as much. I learned a lot about why I teach the way I teach, but I also learned a lot about what I thought was too much for students actually wasn't, you know, and about working in a team. I think overall our students benefited by our different kinds of teachers having common ground, and my, my day-to-day interactions with my peers changed. And that was a big learning moment for me, Jacob, because I think about 5-6 years into teaching, it was an aha moment that was like, hey, it's not you versus the other teachers, right? You and a couple other teachers versus the other teachers. It's all of you together figuring out how to, you know, make the educational experience the best it can be. And sometimes that means giving a little bit or shifting a little bit. And I learned a lot, man. I learned a lot. I think it gave me more credibility with my students, especially with regards to behavioral stuff that was happening in other classrooms. I could say like, hey, come on, we're all following these policies. What's going on in Mr. So-and-so's class? You know, like in previous years, Jacob, I know the students would say, well, you know, he's such and such, he's a real jerk about the rules. Like all he cares about is whether or not, you know, we're following directions. And I said, well, you know, now I know, like, I care about you, and I also care that you're following directions. It just gave me a little bit more leverage. I think I became a better teacher that year, but it was a struggle. It was a struggle to adjust to a school-wide system. And every teacher out there, I bet you can relate. There's always something, whether it's like, a new policy about when we're starting particular, you know, learning lessons, or, you know, what time we have lunch at versus all these kinds of, like, really non-negotiables you have a lot of say in as a teacher that impact how you teach. You know, it's also, Jacob, a silver lining. It's one of the joys of this career is that it's never the same. So, you know, it was sort of like, that's right around year 5-6. I was like, whoa, this job really is never the same. I don't think this is ever going to get old. It's never going to get boring. And it layered on that level of, I want to say, challenge to me, which I like. It's like, hey, not only are you required to teach and have your teacher voice, but you got to be part of a team. And I think before that, I was more of like a lone ranger, a little bit of a rogue teacher who did pretty good at things. Like I enjoyed my teaching, and students did great in my class and liked it. And I certainly also made mistakes like any teacher. So I'm not bragging that I was a perfect teacher, but I was definitely different in terms of things. And that year I really turned the corner on trying to figure out how could I stay who I was, but contribute to the whole team. And sometimes if you're a teacher listening out there, that's not me saying just go with the flow of what's happening in school. Sometimes you're just not in the right school. Yeah. Right. And so that's kind of one of those things. I was like, well, I'm really in the right school. I really like this place. I just teach differently. But I think, you know, as a coach too, I can relate now in my older years. This is like when you have a really talented player on your team, but you know, you need them to be more of a team player. You need to play their role and, you know, and work within the system. And so that was a good learning year for me. Difficult one. Whew. You know, still something I struggle with. I just got my marching orders for what a syllabus needs to look like this year in teaching. And I'm like, that doesn't look like my syllabus. My syllabus is engaging. It's fun. It's got videos in it. It's got all kinds of how to's, you know, but I also understand the broader context of being on a team, and understanding the political climate that we're teaching in right now. And had I not had those difficult years early in my teaching career, Jacob, I might not have that skill today to understand we're part of a system. We're part of a team, and choose your battles, right?
For me, Johnny, I'm not a teacher, and God willing, I never will be.
So for me, when I come into these conversations, I think about teachers as they relate to students. But I'm glad you brought it back to where you did, because being a teacher is also about being one teacher amongst many teachers in a school. And that's equally important. That's as just as much a part of the job and just as much as part of the challenge as relating to students is. Tim, do you want to tell that story again?
I was like, I'm wondering. I'm like, okay, so now where do I go?
Well, I'm going to ask you, you know, I'll ask you that first question again, Tim. Tell us a fun, positive experience you had as a teacher and what that did to make you more gooder as a teacher.
More gooder. I love being more gooder. You know what? Putting in the effort to actually pull together a full out Civil War day with my fifth graders, turning and showing the proof that fifth graders with things to do that are interesting can spend an entire day from morning until the end of school day fully engaged in learning opportunities when they're provided in situations that allow them to dig deep and explore. Got a lot of parent volunteers together for this opportunity. We actually had one of my students, they were pig farmers, and that was Lacey Watkins. And Mrs. Watkins, she goes, you know, I can bring a pig. And I was like, well, that would be, I'm like, do we need a kid? She goes, no, I mean, like, we can cook a pig.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, she goes, like, they did it, you know. And so, yeah, we cooked a full pig in the back of the schoolyard. You know, I had a couple reenactment companies show up to drill the students on, you know, how to march and handle things like that. We built camps where they could sit up, you know, did a lot of reading, had the music teacher come out and teach, you know, Civil War songs, did some artwork. And so the effort I put into planning that day, and again, with my other fifth grade colleagues, and the coordination with parents and realizing how much parents actually do want to get involved and how much they can help, putting that out there and insisting to my principal, who was really challenged by the idea of a whole day. You know, because, and again, that was what, 94, 95, you know, instructional time. Tim, that's a lot of lost instructional time. Like, no, it was a whole lot of learning time, truly, that was experienced by all. Me, really importantly, to be able to say, you can do it. But you know what it also taught me is that you do have to plan with lots of people and create lots of opportunities. And so I kind of push against people who are like, hey, just let kids do it, they'll have a good time. No, you can let kids have an opportunity to be exploratory, but create lots of opportunities for them to do that. And doing that requires a lot of work, a lot of planning, a lot of effort, and a lot of people coming together to make things like that happen. And so, you know, I think that also set me in that mode of saying, you know, particularly when lost instruction time motif, or whatever you want to say, continued to accelerate, I don't know. It made me say, we can do more than worry about how much time we spend on reading and math. And then that led me into opting my kid out of high stakes testing and creating busted pencils. And so there, Civil War Day created busted pencils.
This makes me think about what Johnny was just telling us about with the interactions with fellow teachers and with administrators. What was it like, Tim, going up to the other teachers and the principal and saying, hey, here's an idea. Let's do like a Civil War Day. Because I can see that being intimidating for a young teacher. And I can see the principal be like, oh, the new guy wants to do some big thing. Wait till he learns. We don't do big things around here.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, holy crap, Jacob. That's a whole actually show in and of itself.
Yeah.
The resistance this young teacher faced in that situation by actually a lot of my teacher colleagues and the principal together. It probably was that event, along with the compounding effect of trying to do more things like that, that actually took me out of public school teaching. So I don't want to, boy, that sounds like a negative experience, but it was just realizing though that, look, if I'm going to, you know, it was a positive experience because it got me motivated to finish my PhD and to go into teacher education, to work with future teachers, to really empower them with saying, you can do these things.
It's not a negative experience, Tim. As you said, it was a positive experience. And because it was so positive, you said, hey, I'm going to do this whatever way I have to, so that more people can have these positive experiences.
There, thank you. There you are. You're better than AI, Jacob.
Thank you. In some aspects, yes, and others, no. Guys, thank you so much for being here. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Jenny Lupinacci, great guests on your own show as always. But there's one thing that I do at the end of every Producer's Choice show, and we're going to do that thing right now. Let's go! Dr. Jenny Lupinacci, 60 seconds on the board. Give a shout out to a teacher that was instrumental in helping you as a young teacher.
Oh, you know what? I think the first teacher that comes to mind is, since we were talking about geometry class, I'm going to throw a shout out to, you know, Mirza Beg, Mr. Beg, at high school, my geometry teacher. Also had him for homeroom a couple times. Just a genuinely entertaining, great, brilliant math teacher who, you know, communicated mathematical concepts with a passion, and was engaging and made math really fun, and had all these great little sayings, that stuck in our heads. And it just stuck with me. I was like, man, I got to teach like Mr. Begg. What a great experience I had in his classroom, and thought of him often and still do as I'm teaching.
Mm. Tim, same question to you. Who's a teacher? Give a shout out to them that helped you out as a young teacher.
Dr. Mary Bevavino, my student teaching coordinator, supervisor, instructor, who absolutely did not allow me to fall into the lazy guy stigma and pushed me so hard to actually be able to realize that you can do these cool and creative things, Tim, but you need to put in the effort to the planning and the preparation that goes into it, because when you do these things, you will get resistance. And one of the simplest ways to push on that resistance is to do it well. And so Dr. Mary Bevavino, Edinburgh University, thank you so much. Incredibly special person to me.
Great answers all around. Now there's time for one last thing. And if there was one last thing, Tim, I would remind Tim that he shouldn't read the AI-generated responses in our chat. He should read the one last. Tim, go ahead.
You mean the time for a moment of zen. History can untie our minds, our bodies, our disposition to move, to engage life rather than contemplating it as an outsider.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Busted Pencils, Producer Jacob's Choice. And remember, you can grab great podcasts packed full with more Busted Pencils content on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course on the Civic Media website, or at bustedpencils.com. Hey, and don't you dare next week be late for homeroom. And make sure you grab next week's class and session on Wednesday. And if you don't already know, well, you're going to love it, because you can catch Busted Pencils broadcast at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media's network stations on Saturday for an hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep Busted Pencils.